This is a podcast from Minute Media.
And here in Detroit, where so many of the tools of victory were turned out, it's in the air. All Detroit wants another kind of victory. They're out to see the Detroit Tigers, their favorite ball team. Let's go inside.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Tigers Radio Pod here at MotorCityMingles.com. I'm Rogelio Castillo. Alongside me is Youper. Chris will be joining us shortly, and no, he's not getting pooed on his porch, rather, because of his Casey Mize article. We'll get to that in a second. And you can find us on iTunes, Spotify, iHeartMedia, and Stitcher. And our guest this evening, I hope to make her, and pardon me, I'm a little bit under the weather. And no, it's not COVID, so please do not freak out. So our regular writer on our staff, Motor City Bengals, and I hope to make her come out of the pot more because, quite frankly, she's good at what she does. And yeah, so this actually, she goes back to the days of Ticks Town with Chris, and you've written for the Canadian Hall of Fame website, I believe.
The Canadian Baseball Network, and I used to post every now and then to Bless You Boys, but mainly the Canadian Baseball Network, yep.
Awesome. So without further ado, Chris would ask you this question, but I'm going to have to take over this evening. What is your earliest baseball memory?
I remember actually writing about this in one of my older stories. I was really close with my grandparents, and one memory in particular that I have, I think I was about 8. I went to their house one evening, and I was staying there for the weekend. And I remember being in my 101 Dalmatians pajama onesie. We had our like wood veneer TV table set up ready for dinner, watching the Blue Jays, big Blue Jays fans. And the one thing that stands out to me the most from that is my grandparents were from Ukraine. We're Ukrainian. So anytime they saw a baseball player's name that slightly resembled something that sounded European, they were like, oh, he must be ours. He must be from Ukraine. So yeah, that's my first kind of baseball memory. Just after that, it was in the family and always around, always talking about it. My dad grew up in Michigan, so there's the Tigers connection there for me. My mom's a huge Blue Jays fan, so a rivalry in the house, but it's fun.
Yeah, especially because being at I've been to the Sky Dome once, and it was when I got there, I was awestruck because it was something that I remember when I was a kid. It was a big deal, this beautiful, majestic stadium. And then I went, it's not the same. But it was still a great atmosphere because Blue Jay fans, any minor league game I went to in 2019, or even when they were in Lansing, I remember we were in Toledo, and some Blue Jay fans were just there. And same, went to an Indians game when Jim Tomei was getting his statue retired. Same thing. They weren't playing the Blue Jays, but there was Blue Jay fans everywhere. So they traveled very well. And there was one guy I met in Lansing who went to every single minor league affiliate. That was his vacation to go. So I thought that was really cool.
Funny about that is you called it the Sky Dome. It's the Rogers Center now, but yeah. Me, it'll always be the Sky Dome because that's what I grew up calling it. And yeah, with the name change, I don't know, it just sticks with you. But yeah, it's a bit of an underwhelming ballpark. I would say it's not one of my favorites, but Sky Dome it is.
Yeah, it's the Rogers Center. Go ahead, Youper. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, Danielle, I liked your story because it links in with so many of the other people that we've had on. And you ask that same question, and it's always, not every time, but almost always, it comes back to your family. Mm-hmm. And that's a big part of that first memory. And it's something most of us have in common. And that's one of the coolest things about baseball is we just all have this commonality of why we do what we do and watch what we watch. So thanks for sharing that story. That was good.
Yeah, and you always pick up on traditions here and there, and baseball is one of them for me. So it's through the family way down. Everybody loves it and everybody's always watching it. And yeah, it's a favorite around here, that's for sure.
Cool.
So speaking of games that are going on, by the way, the Dodgers are up 3-2 right now at the end of the second. When Freddie Freeman went up 2-0, let all the air out of the stadium. But then all of a sudden, Chris Taylor comes up and says, look, I'm going to be worth some money in free agency. I'm going to start raining. And he hit a home run and got 3-run shot. And so now the Dodgers are up 3-2. And so this is a series that I thoroughly enjoy because I thought the Dodgers would walk in and blast the Braves. And of course, I'm wrong, and I freely admit that. But the Braves have, again, they get, on the road in LA, it's a tough place to play. The Dodgers play very well at home. And a team that's played really well on the road is Houston. And Houston's up 3-2 in that series. And there's some questionable decision that Joey Cora we'll get to a little later. But I do want to, the reason why the episode is named Upper Domus is because a few podcasts ago, so Upper was discussing the idea of Riley Green at the time and Ferguson going to the Arizona Fall League. And if I could do the flashback effect, which I think I do have, one of the things that you were talking about was that you remember when, was it Scott Sizemore that got hurt? Is that what it was?
Scott Sizemore got hurt. So that really affected him into the next year after he was all set to inherit the starting job at second base. And whether you agree he should have gotten it and or they should have extended Placido Polanco, which I've always thought was silly romantic talk, he got hurt and that affected him. And who knows, maybe he would have been just as average a player, but he got off to a bad start because of that. And then the other one, the big one to me has always been when Ryan Rayburn collided with Jason Kubel on a routine defensive play and shattered Jason Kubel's leg.
And he
became a pretty decent player, but he was never as fast as he was before that injury. Who knows how it affected him long-term for the longevity of his career. So, I mean, anytime you put, and obviously you can hurt yourself stepping off the curb, right? In front of your house. But anytime you expose these guys to an extra 30, 40 games or whatever, you're asking to put up with some risk of injury. And these are two highly important properties Tigers have. And I just think they needed to be judicious with where they put these guys and what kind of payoff are you getting? Torkelson was off to a nice start. He was 7-for-14 or whatever he was with a bunch of walks. And that's great. What does that mean for next year? I'm not sure because the pitching that Arizona Fall League is always.
And there's been the radars hit mid-90s for a couple of these guys too. And so there's, for example, Wilmer Flores is going tonight for the Tigers as the game starts at 9:30, which I thought Mountain Time was 2 hours behind, but apparently it's, I don't know, the baseball, I feel like they're messing with us or something because I swore earlier it said 6:35. So I'm like, okay, 2 hours be 8:35. Apparently not. It was 7:35 then, I guess. I don't know. But Flores, who was in Lakeland, will be pitching tonight and should be, it, we'll see how he does.
And those kind of guys are perfect for the Arizona Fall League. The Tigers probably want to see more of those. They need to evaluate players like him. I don't think they need to evaluate Riley Green and Spencer Torkelson in that environment. That's basically how I look at it.
I would have to agree. Was it the right move sending Torkelson to the Arizona Fall League? Because he is such, for lack of a better word, calling him a high commodity, but he really is to the Tigers. And you've seen him being evaluated in so many other games. You already have an idea of how good he is. And it's never easy to see one of your top prospects go down that way. An ankle injury is, I don't know, it's not the best. It's pretty serious, in my opinion. And you depend on him later on down the line to do well. And they've centered the team around him almost. And he's always been at the forefront of the talks of the future. And I did actually list that as one of the bad for the segment later on. I would have to agree with you there. It's an iffy call, I would think.
And the one thing I want to ask you guys both, and I'll start with you, Danielle, it's ankle injury to me, just from my amateur doctor point of view, seems like it's a type of injury that lingers for a while, like similar to a back injury. When you have an injury, your back, it seems like it lingers well.
I would agree. I grew up playing sports. I'm not a professional by any means, but I did play sports when I was younger. And you always have those lingering injuries, as you said. One of mine is my knee. It's constantly bugging me. Any kind of weather change, you move wrong, it tweaks. So I can only imagine what it would feel like as a professional baseball player, being such a top prospect in a club, and to go down with an injury like that, it's not fun. You don't want to have that kind of stain for the rest of your career just starting out. And he's such a good player to have that I think the fans are almost counting on things all really well. And it's scary to see.
And from an ankle perspective, obviously he wasn't drafted because of his wheels, so that's okay. I mean, in some respects, but it really boiled down to, is there ligament damage long term, or is it more of just a soft tissue injury around the ankle? if that's the case, he's probably back in a few days, and that's cool. So we're just going to have to see where it goes. Wow. I don't know. Have they announced anything?
They said it was a sprained ankle. I'm not sure the severity of the sprain. So that's something to importantly remember, because if it's something that structurally the ankle, for somebody myself, I used to run cross country, my knee and my ankle were both just donezo, and my ankle's never been the same since I had a severe sprain my senior year, to the point where I sat out for the majority of the season. So I totally get it. Again, high school, professional, two different things. I'm not going to pretend
I don't know, Raj. I heard you're pretty solid on that right across that golf course.
No, but you're right. I did run across, no kidding, no joke, our original final my junior year was on a golf course in Ann Arbor.
Yes, lots of cross country and golf mix.
No. Oh, yeah, you know it too well. That's right. But yeah, there is and then again, the other thing I wanted to get to was the news that the Tigers made another interesting hire in the front office, as this was something that just slipped through, as Francis Romero, who does a really good job. I think he's an independent reporter. He should get a lot more due. And he has tuned in to the Cuban baseball pipeline of everything. And I was disappointed that there's not more a big deal made out of the big deal out of this or something. I don't know if you've seen the press release or not, but outside of myself and I believe Bless You Boys wrote about it. And that was Yuki. I said that right, Engel? I was talking about that. Yuki Rojas as the new director of Latin player development. And he comes from an interesting background, because when I was looking it up, and he originally was hired by David Littlefield in Pittsburgh. So you shriek in horror a little bit, but then you realize that he stayed on after Littlefield left. He was in Boston during their championship run, and then he went back to Pittsburgh, and then he was their bullpen coach. And so there was I did read in an Athletic that he did get in a minor, him and Crick, I think I forgot the first name of the gentleman, a coach got into the dispute where he was suspended for 2 days, but that seemed like some really minor stuff, and who cares, really? It's something that wasn't detrimental to the team. But this guy's a really good, comes from a pitching ground background. He's the all-time leader in saves for the Cuban national team, and he pitched for the Havana Indesitas, which is one of the top teams. Like, they're the Yankees, essentially, of the Cuban national series, which is their top league. I don't know. I'll start with you, Yuper. This seems like and he's also had direction. He also has experience in development too. He was for a while, helped Pittsburgh get going in Dominican Republic, I believe. So
his resume, I certainly couldn't go much beyond what we get to read as far as resume goes.
Right.
What I hope is that he's someone who has the personal relationships throughout Cuba and other parts of the Caribbean that can get the Tigers a little stronger foothold. We haven't heard a lot about this. It's an underreported area in general, because we're talking about mostly 15 and 16 year old kids who are oftentimes 5 to 7 years away from the majors when they're signed. But it just seems that there is an old boys network underneath the surface that funnels a lot of these players to certain teams. And now, is Rojas part of that? Does he have the relationship with some of the talent developers there, who have a lot of influence on these young kids where they sign? If he does, that's something that Tigers, in my opinion, I think the opinion of many, Tigers have been sorely lacking for a long time. They're never rarely in the running for some of the Cuban players who come over. How different would these two franchises look if Luis Robert was in a Tiger uniform right now? if they had that relationship to get him. Hopefully Rojas is that guy. It was a good thing to read this week.
And then, I know that you cover the minor leagues for Takestown a little bit, but it does seem, in your opinion, are the Tigers really far behind in the international market, or do you think they're getting close?
I would say with signing or hiring Rojas, I think it's a positive movement forward. I think they needed it. I think having that kind of culture change in the front office is a good fit for Detroit, especially, like you said, to appeal to the international free agent market. And again, having those relationships with the players. And he does have the pitching coach experience with the Marlins, the Red Sox, and I think it was the Pirates, you said in your story as well. But just to circle back on that, I would actually urge people to read your story on Motor City Bengals, because his story is probably one of the most amazing that I've read. So I really do think that this help the Tigers progress in a more positive way.
Yeah, he floated on a 15-foot raft with several other people to escape Cuba. And so he also will not represent the Cuban national team in any way, shape, or form after he left it. He's gotten some grief about it. And as you can see in my background, if you're watching on YouTube, I do have a Cuban flag, but my father was Cuban, and I honor my dad every day as any way I can. And honestly, like, if, for people that haven't been there or understand the struggle, imagine not being able to eat what you want. You get rationed a quart of milk every month. And if you, I know it's horrible. And I know I'm not a big political person. I never will be. And I don't plan on talking about it. But one thing is certain, the Cubans are getting, have gotten the wrong deal for a long time. For what Rojas had to do, I don't blame him. And so I heard a lot of stupid raft jokes when I was a kid too. And it drove me nuts. Oh, you float over here on the raft. Huh? I was born here, dipshits. Anyway. Sorry, I understand the frustration.
Yeah, if I could actually jump in there, I would. There's similarities a lot of the time between Cuban stories and Ukrainian immigrant stories. For a long time, they weren't independent up until 1991, where they were their own domain, basically, and without getting too political. But again, it's these positive changes. You need these people in front office. You need them in leadership positions where they can actually influence and make a difference. And I think he really will do that.
For sure. And the I think the biggest thing I could take away from all this too is that there'll probably be some more, I think they'll be in the mix for that more. And I think that it's no offense to, I believe it was Rafael Martinez, I think it was the previous one, the previous Latin development, but I don't, it's not his fault or anything. So it is what it is. And the Tigers want to make a change. And speaking of changes, oh, the wonderful Chris Brown joins. Hey, Chris Brown.
Hey, speaking of changes, David Bowie in the house.
Mr. Casey Myers himself. Hey.
Oh, geez. All right. So, yeah, I apologize for showing up so late. I was, and whatever reason, we still put our son, who's almost 8, to sleep every night. Tonight, he was not having it. So, and Tara had city council tonight, so it was all on me.
Oh, it's city council night. Yeah, that's right.
I failed. Maybe it was the coconut cream pie I gave him at 8 o'clock. But
anyway. That's a decision worth revisiting.
Yes. But you, good to see you. Good to see you again. Danielle, nice to meet you finally in person.
Good too.
Theoretically.
Good to be here.
So what I missed so far?
So we thought, well, I gave her the question, or well, first time guest, and hopefully, or recurring host from here on out. We talked about the ALCS, the NLCS, just had a brief overview of what's going on. Which, by the way, the Dodgers are up 3-2, I believe, last I checked. And then we just started going to Rojas, the Rojas hire for the Tigers. And we also discussed Spencer Torkelson's injury a little bit. And that's why the episode's called Euperdamus.
Well, so, you know what? I was, I was a little bit out of the loop. Was there any confirmation about what happened there? Or was it just
a sprained ankle? That's all they said was.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good.
The severity of it is, I'm not sure about that yet. Yeah. But
not that dreaded high ankle sprain.
Right.
Yeah. The one that never goes away. I think, because I was talking about how you and I have talked about this before, how back injuries linger around. Ankle injuries are just as bad, too, because you're so scared to put a certain amount of pressure on there or what have you. So it's always, especially, I imagine football. I remember, was it Frank Gore had over 100 knee surgeries?
100. Oof. Good Lord.
Yeah. Something like that. He had all these tears all the time. But by the way, if you're watching us on YouTube, you can make a comment, ask a question for the show. We have a question later today from one of my favorite accounts, which we'll get to in a little while. That guy rules, by the way.
Deadly Ninja Bees?
Deadly Ninja Bees is, by me, you can join our fan ring of honor if that ever was a thing. Also, we did get a 5-star review, I think, yesterday. So thank you for sending that in. I wish I remembered your name right now, but I'm drawing a blank. But yeah, so
I got a 5-star review the week after I was gone. I wonder if that
was it from you?
Yeah, so if you have a question for the podcast, just let us know and we'll gladly answer it. But yeah, I was just talking about Rojas and what a good impactful hire, and hopefully will provide some much more into the pipeline. Oh, sorry, Chris, go ahead.
Oh no, yeah, no, I was just trying to bring up the AFL. Yeah, no, a lot of these hires, I don't know. I wanted to write a piece a while ago about, I've referenced it like a half dozen times out here and still haven't done it, but about the kind of the lack of impact from the international market the Tigers have gotten. So maybe this will help. It can't hurt.
No, it cannot.
Unless he gives favorable treatment, that one article you found.
Oh, about. Yeah. I think with that article I found, I think it was just let the guy just be, you know what I mean? Like he's.
Yeah, it was more of a nobody likes a tattletale.
Yeah.
Kind of reaction, exactly. You know?
Yeah. So. Just shut up and go do your thing. And I'm just don't worry about them. Are they pitching effectively? Yes, of course. But yeah, let's continue on. And we are going to. Unless you have anything else to add, Chris, about the Torkelson injury before we move on?
No, not really. Yeah, I assume you called Yiprodamus because he was worried about players getting injured. And yeah. And like I said, we haven't seen Kreidler in the week, so I checked the roster today to see if he's playing. But yeah, I don't know. Hopefully it's no big deal. I think, yeah, it was only a handful of games, but anybody who was watching was like, yeah, Torkelson looked pretty good. He wasn't in for a ton of power yet, but he was doing what we talked about toward the end of the season, going the opposite way. Poking singles when he could, taking his walks, which is all good signs to me.
Yeah, exactly. He's trying to go the opposite field.
It's time for Rogelio and Chris to go inside the numbers.
Fire! All right, it's time for inside the number. Danielle, what is your guess? So you go first. What is your inside the number?
So mine was about Julio Urdel. Only the second time in his career that he's given up 3 home runs in a game. The last one was June 2nd, 2016.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a good one. That's a really good one. Well played.
He must have been like 19 then.
Young guy.
Yeah. Didn't he went out, didn't he miss a season because of his elbow, right? Like he had really bad elbow.
I thought it was actually his shoulder. Like he was one of those rotator cuff things were, oh geez, like a rotator cuff capsule or whatever that was like, oh, this might end him. But so yeah, it's been a kind of a quiet, really cool comeback story for him.
Yeah, there's no question. Early on, they were really worried about that elbow or shoulder, excuse me. I think that 3 homer one might have been his debut.
Oh wow. I believe it was. Yeah, right in the beginning of his career.
That's cool.
That's the only thing I know because of fantasy baseball.
I was gonna say, wait, I should put a fantasy baseball or kind of thing, going in that conversation.
Exactly.
Uper, what about you? What's your inside number?
Very simple one tonight. 7. Chris Sale, 7 career postseason starts, 0 quality starts. One of the best pitchers of his generation, most talented anyway. Yeah, just it's still a small sample, and you're always taking on the best teams in baseball. So when you talk playoff success or lack of success, all that needs to be factored in. So I don't think this really draws him as less valuable pitchers because he's 0-7 on quality starts in the playoffs. But I think it just does tell us at least a little bit about, there's been a lot of talk this week about bullpen games and starters not going very long and being, you know, jacked around into other roles. And that's fine. You also see a guy as talented as him who, as a traditional starter, hasn't gotten the job done either. I just think there's more. As we go along through baseball and roles are changing, we're seeing more ways to win. Whether it's Framber Valdez went 8 innings to win for Houston the other night in a traditional starting role. But the same night, I think the Braves used 7 pitchers to get 27 outs to beat the Dodgers. So there's just a lot of ways to go about it.
All right, Chris, what about you?
Yeah, you know what? It's mine's almost exactly the same. My number is 6.35. That's Chris Sale's career postseason ERA. And in 34 innings, he's allowed 24 earned runs. And his outing the other night, 2 earned runs at 5 1/3, is probably his second best postseason start ever.
Yeah.
Just like you said, he's just a fascinating pitcher to me because he's truly like a Hall of Fame level talent. I was looking it up in the integration era. He's got a top 20 ERA, career ERA among pitchers with at least 1,500 innings. Like he's above Roger Clemens. He's up there with Bob Gibson. It's a 3.03 career ERA, but it's like clockwork for him. It seems like as soon as it gets close to the end of summer, he starts to struggle. And so you can look at his career ERA. It's 2.69 in May, 2.56 in June, 2.78 in July, but then 3.26 in August, 3.77 in September, and of course 6.35 in October. It's like in my head, maybe it doesn't pay to be built like a scarecrow, but it can't just be him tiring every year, I wouldn't think, but who knows? So I don't know. So yeah, I just found that interesting. We had pretty similar fans there, or inside the numbers, I should say. They were both bad.
They're both bad.
I would have to agree with both of you. I actually made a note of it earlier. My dad and I were talking about him, and we were talking about him this series, and it's almost like he's not giving the Red Sox what they're hoping for. kind of thing. And we circled back to he's almost like Clayton Kershawing this series. So I don't know. It's just a really interesting observation to watch him now.
Yeah. And part of it is that's a great point with Kershaw because he is number one in the integration era in ERA, but he for so long struggled in the postseason. And it's just one of those things that, like you say, you're facing the best teams and the moment is bigger and you have little room for error. Part of it just could be the small sample, but yeah, it's fascinating to see that happen.
Yeah, Kershaw has come up with a couple of good games here and there to mix in. I mean, it's been roughed up every time. But well, yeah, it's also interesting. They're both tall, lanky lefties with funky deliveries.
Yeah, and I remember a couple of years ago, I tweeted this out. Justin Verlander has been one of the great postseason pitchers in the modern era, particularly in the division in ALCS series. But his World Series ERA is abysmal. It's just kind of funny the way it works. Some guys just have a couple rough outings, and that's going to ruin them for a while.
There's I think that one of the things I've noticed, and there's a theme going across the postseason, is that you talk about, well, you know, pitching matters and pitching. That's always been the key with, but I think about it. If you think about outside of the Diamondbacks in 01, was it? Yeah. 01 mm-hmm. with Randy Johnson and Curt Schilling, no one could ever remember the rest of that rotation. And it was one of the first teams that was slowly built on they really didn't have a lot of guys through their system. Everybody was acquired through free agency or trade, what have you. But then I think about those Braves team that had Smoltz, Maddox, and Glavine. Because I was doing an article on pitching. I did a Chris Fetter Effect article for Here's the Pitch, which is for International Baseball Writers Association. And I was talking about Lee Mazzoni, who was the pitching coach for the Braves and renowned for putting together this great rotation. And John Smoltz thanks him all the time for fixing his funky delivery, make him a better pitcher. And I was thinking about that, how we might have that version of that with Chris Fetter in Detroit. We might have our own Lee Mazzoni. And again, I know for some of the people under 30 or under, who the hell is that guy? I'm not saying you, Danielle, because I know you're baseball, but.
For some stuff, I don't know everything. But
yeah.
Sometimes I'm like, what are you saying? Most of the time I can keep up.
But so I just wanted to mention that because I thought that was the theme has always been pitching, but it seems like in this postseason, you can throw that out the window. These battles of aces, you think about the 91 World Series, Jack Morris against John Smoltz, and they went 10 innings and it was a 1-0 win. And so
yep.
Those days are, to me, they're long gone. I know Dave Roberts gets a really weird look, like the Mike Myers look of how he starts a bullpen, but it works. So who am I to judge?
The starters too, the way starters, you're never going to see those again. I agree, because it's a harder job than it's ever been. Back in the days when Sandy Koufax and all those guys were pitching them, you know, Mickey Lolich, whatever, going full, the shortstop couldn't hit. The second baseman was a little guy who couldn't hit. The shortstop was, or the center fielder was a little guy who couldn't hit. And the catcher was a big guy that couldn't hit.
Yeah.
Okay. There was like four or five guys that were
downwards.
They're on mad adults.
Yeah.
And the pitcher was batting to boot. You could plow your way through a lineup a lot easier. And I think sometimes the old journalists who were hanging on to the glory days of the 60s and 70s don't want to admit that there's just more power in today's game. It's way harder to navigate a lineup for 9 innings.
Yeah, and you need all the advantages you can get. So my inside number is 2. It's 357 and 176, and that is Austin Riley's batting average. 357 at home with a home run, 3 RBIs. He's 5-for-14 at home. On the road, he's batting, his splits are 176, 222, and 353. At home, his OPS, I should have said his splits in the first place, 438 OPS on-base percentage, and slugging at 643. So he is, and this is something, Chris, I know you and I have talked about, one of Mississippi, whoever won that national player of the year award has then really gone places, I guess. Remember we had the discussion about him, about Austin Riley?
Yeah, player, high school players from Mississippi.
Yeah, because talk about context was Cole Keith, which I think is going to be a little different. But either way, I just thought that was fascinating because they talk about him being a postseason hero. And then I look at him like at home, yes, of course. He back to back and he's done a fantastic job. But on the road, his road splits are just it's like Rocky-esque.
Yeah, he's a really interesting one who was, like, he was a top 100 prospect and a guy that people liked a lot, but there was always these worries about strikeouts. And it looked like that was going to be his undoing. And then this year, he just figured out a way to do enough damage when he wasn't striking out that he became a really good player. I think he might have led the Braves in WAR this year, actually. So, yeah, it's another a good example of maybe not giving up on your young players.
Yeah, and I'm glad for the Braves, too, because they've made this series an interesting one in the sense that it was just not going to roll over. But they're fighting for it right now. And both series, I think, are going to go either – potentially, I think both series could go 7 games. I think that's a realistic possibility. And the Dodgers are still fighting their way out of this hole that they're in right now. But going back to Atlanta, it's a different place to play. And credit where credit's due. And the Braves, yeah, we'll get to that in a second. That's part of my, it's part of a segment that I love. It's something that it makes a lot of sense. All right, it's time for the good, the bad, the ugly. Chris, you start off tonight. What is the good, the bad, the ugly?
Oh, all right. Thank you. My good is Eddie Rosario. And I might not be the only one who picked this, so I apologize. But it's hard not to after his ridiculous game against the Dodgers the other night, 4-for-5 with a triple and 2 homers. But mostly this is just an opportunity for me to throw out my unproven and almost certainly wrong theory about the most dangerous players in the postseason being the guys who swing at everything. And like most of my theories, it goes back to Delmon Young, who Delmon Young's career postseason OPS is like 100 points higher than his regular season. And he got big hits for the Tigers and against them. And so I was looking at over the last 20 years, the players with the highest swing rates overall. And Eddie Rosario, he is 15th. And his postseason OPS right now is about 300 points higher than his regular season OPS. And you can see like other guys in that top 20 or top 30, AJ Pierzynski, postseason OPS is 130 points higher than his regular season. Pablo Sandoval, 150 points higher. So that's where I'll stop. And my theory is correct. Pay no attention to Abisail Garcia and Adam Jones.
Shadow point trick there.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just the thing that like, it seemed like for a while the Tigers were only targeting guys like that. Your Dawel Lugos who would swing at everything and could put the bat on everything, but necessarily didn't do any damage. For whatever reason, they just seemed to do damage in the postseason. But that was my good. My bad is Trey Turner, which is a bummer because I love Trey Turner as a player. Tons of speed, good power, plays up the middle. And I don't know if it's just because he always seems to find a way to be hurt in the playoffs. I remember a couple of years ago, his finger was basically pointing the wrong way, and I don't know if his finger's hurt again. But heading into 37 career postseason games, he's 170 plate appearances. He has a 540 OPS in the postseason. 1 home run. 219 batting average, 5.3% walk rate, and a 26% strikeout rate. He's never been like a huge walk guy. It's like a 7.5% walk rate, but that strikeout rate is like 8 points higher than his regular season.
Wow.
And his isolated power, which we talk about, your slugging minus batting average, in his career, it's 189. In the postseason, it's 062. He did have 2 hits in the wild card game, but he's just 7-for-41 sets, including his 1 hit tonight. And I guess he got hit by a pitch in the second at bat. But yeah, it's a bummer. He's a really good player, and he's just been bad playoffs. Another one of those cases where, you know, the moment's too big for him, the challenge, or if he's just... And my ugly is the general lack of competitiveness in the ALCS. Now, the NLCS has been mostly great. A lot of, I think the first 3 games were all decided by 1 run. He had a couple walk-offs there. It was the blowout on Wednesday night. But the ALCS has just been really strange. It was a close game in game 1, and then Boston won by 4, and then won by 9, and then Houston come back and wins by 7 and 8. And I think I heard it was the first postseason series ever with 3 consecutive games decided by 7 runs or more.
Wow.
And to be fair, the one, I don't know if it was Wednesday night where it was really close. It was the game Sale pitched, I think, or I don't remember which game it was, maybe the one before that, but Astros scored 7 runs in the ninth. Before that, it was really close, but still, it's just been not great games for the casual observer or somebody who's not as a vested interest. And that's just a bummer in my opinion.
And they've been early rallies, too, where the game's over in second inning. At least could have waited till the 7th inning to score 7 runs or something.
Yeah, that's what they did there in the one game I was talking about. But yeah, it's just been a strange kind of competitive blowout, if you will.
Yep.
All right, Youper, what about you? What's your...
Well, you made a couple of good. Definitely the Atlanta Braves. I know we've talked about it a bit in the past, but it bears reiterating. Ronald Acuna goes down. And who gave them much chance to be where they are right now when that happens? They never had Mike Soroka all year, but... Especially Acuna after 90 games, the season's over. They make those moves at the deadline. It really was amazing how aggressive they were. And they went out and got good players, not necessarily great players. but they're great. They're good players who have performed very well for them. Soler, Peterson, Rosario, Duvall. And it's all worked out. How often you go for that in getting guys who are really going to help your lineup in the playoffs? And it's, but there's also that little bit of luck factor. If Soler doesn't get hurt, is Eddie Rosario getting all these at-bats? You know, probably pretty questionable. Or not hurt, he's sick, he got COVID. But either way, if he's in the lineup, what's he doing right now? Is he hitting home runs or is he striking out? And we don't know. They got a little fortuitous there that Rosario got these at-bats and he's come through like a champ for them. So this has been the Braves for me growing up when I did, and there wasn't baseball everywhere on television. You got the Superstation. And I was a Dale Murphy fan, and I watched probably 110 Braves games a year. So I'm not a huge Braves fan, but I always do. If it's them versus the Dodgers, I'll pick the Braves and I'll follow them. So this has been a very fun watch in the playoffs to see them. Freddie Freeman is just a fantastic player. Really fun to watch him swing the bat. My bad, Dodgers offense came in tonight hitting .211 as a team in the playoffs. They're on base percentage. 266. I think they've scored two runs or less in five of their 10 playoff games. The offense has just dried up, and they miss Max Muncy, obviously, but that shouldn't be all of it. They've spent so much money to build a super team, 106-win team. It's really amazing that their offense has really dried up, although they did a couple homers tonight, so maybe they're going to unleash it soon. My ugly going off the board here. My daughter is in St. Louis right now. She's doing a college visit at the University of Health Sciences and Pharmacy in St. Louis. School has been around for 100 years. They're starting a lacrosse program next year, so she's hopeful to play for them. So she's over there visiting with my wife. I will, without Googling, if any of you three can name their mascot, their nickname, without Googling it, I'll give you $100.
Wait, is it just St. Louis?
It's the University of Health Sciences and Pharmacy.
So it's not
unfair because I'm Canadian.
It's a horrible question. I'm just going to give it to you. They're called the Eutectics.
Eutectics.
The Eutectics.
All right.
Eutectics.
That's for the name, not because your daughter is in the school. That's awesome. But your name is just horrible.
It sounds like a bad 80s, ska band or something. You know, but evidently,
they're a post London band that plays nothing but synth, and they have one drum that goes douche. And they're cut like flock seagulls, except it goes left, right.
The Eutectics opened for the Eurythmics back in the day.
Yeah. I was waiting for it.
So, anyway, the Eutectic, I still kind of get it through my mind, but it's like, the lowest temperature where two alloys will melt together into one or something. It's the most bizarre thing ever.
I'm reading about it right now, the Eutectic system on Wikipedia, and the first thing it says, Eutectic redirects here for the sports mascot, see St. Louis College of Pharmacy and mascot.
Yes. So if my daughter enjoys this visit and she's having lunch with the coach tomorrow, next year is their inaugural season. They have women's sports in basketball and volleyball and a few other things, but they're starting lacrosse. I cannot wait to get the Property of Eutectics sweatshirt. I got so many good laughs and one-liners about that around the house here with her.
Do they have a good logo? If they have a good logo, I'll get a cap.
Their logo is somebody called Michael McPessel or something, okay? It's a crazy guy in a lab coat with a crazy beard, with a mortar and pestle. That's the little guy they have.
All right.
It's the most bizarre thing.
We have, you know what? We have the internet, and we have the ability to show these things. And so I'm going to show right now, if anybody's watching on YouTube, what the hell this logo looks like. And it looks like Teen Wolf. This looks like Teen Wolf. I'm not kidding. I don't know if anybody will get that reference, or younger audience, but...
But you can see he's wearing a lab coat.
Yeah. So before, this is the one before. This was the it used to be the college. This was their old logo. This is part of the new logo. But look at that. He's like, I'm mixing.
Mortimer McPestle. Is that his name? Mortimer McPestle. I kind of like that.
You know what? Honestly, wow. Look at that. Imagine that, seeing that when you wake up. Look, I'm telling you right now, I would get a logo. If I could get a hoodie with that logo, I would be happy. I like the purple and white. It's not the same typical thing, but
if my daughter decides to go there, I'll set you up with one. No question about it.
Yeah.
So we'll see. She's a good little lacrosse player. She's not a star, but I think she could help a small college team. So she wants to be a nurse. That's the most important part. They got to have a good nursing program. So we'll see how it goes. That's my ugly. You tactics.
You tactics. Wow. That's a good way to end it. Okay, Danielle, what is your good, the bad?
So mine were general, not very playoffs or postseason specific. But the good for me, because I haven't been able to talk about this anywhere really, was seeing fans back in Canadian stands. I was talking to Roger about this yesterday. Basically, Ontario was in lockdown consecutively on and off for about a year. So Blue Jays weren't allowed to have fans anywhere. They were playing in Buffalo and Dunedin. So they finally got to have a full stadium for their final homestand. So to me, that was amazing. Another good about that was, even though they did play in Buffalo and Dunedin and split their season everywhere, they almost made it into the postseason. So to me, that just shows how good they will be in the future to be able to adapt that way. But definitely the good for me was seeing fans back in Canadian stands for sure. Sorry, did I cut someone off? So the bad for me was unlikable postseason teams. So specifically, I'm not a very big fan of the Red Sox or the Astros. So watching the ALCS for me, I don't have a rooting interest in either. So it's pick lesser of two evils, I would say. I think I would say I'm pulling for the Braves at this point, despite being such a fan of Scherzer and Mookie and the players that they have. But to me, again, the Dodgers are basically the Yankees of the National League. So yeah. Unlikable team. But another bad for me was the Spencer Torkelson injury, which we spoke about earlier. You never want to see something like that. It's tough to watch, but he did walk off the field. So I'm hoping good things for him there. Another one is just a minor gripe is late game starts. Now that I'm a working 30-year-old, getting up at 6:30 in the morning and then trying to catch the game beforehand, it's not really fun for me, but that's just a minor one. And then the ugly general for me is Joe West and Angel Hernandez. I don't think I have to really elaborate on that front. I think I'm pretty pleased that Joe West will be retiring. And then again, there's been some questionable calls throughout the postseason. Yeah, most recently was when Eovaldi was throwing what should have been a strike to Jason Castro and was called a ball. And then again, San Francisco Giants ending the season on a check swing call. So that was the ugly for me. Not really pleased with those there.
I don't blame you on that. That was good. That was good. Honestly, yep. That was a very good, the bad and the ugly.
No, thanks. I'm good at those things.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that we've had our own kind of ridiculous drama here in the States about the vaccines and stuff, but it's one thing that you don't hear about a lot here is that we had them available, and it wasn't necessarily the case in Canada that we don't have the domestic vaccine production. So you have to count on other people. And yeah, I don't know. It just is something that I hadn't considered till I heard about it recently.
Yeah, I think now Ontario is well above the 75% fully vaccinated. So of the population.
Probably better than any state in the U.S.
Yeah, but we definitely had to wait for vaccines for a long time. It was a relief to see fans trying to have some sense of normalcy when it comes to baseball. It was a little late, but I guess better safe than sorry. So it was nice to see, though.
Yeah, it was definitely cool. I felt bad for Toronto for playing basically three different home stadiums all year and I'm so close. That's one of the reasons I included them in my trade piece, because I thought, hey, maybe they could use a little more pitching.
Hey, you never know. You never know.
Yeah, I think the Blue Jays gave up quite a bit to get Berrios, but I think it was worth it. And I think Berrios being there, the opportunity to re-sign next year, I think, yeah, he's going to be there. That was a good move by them. And you guys took the good for me was the Braves outfield acquisition, because I was thinking about the last time it paid off, and I had to go back to Fred McGriff, but that didn't pay off till for a while. If you look at the trade back then, the trade for Fred McGriff was for, this is again, one of those famous, hi, we're the San Diego Padres. We'd like to make trades every single year in the 90s. And they're always for like six or seven players. Thank you, Randy Smith. And this one was a Randy Smith special. They traded Vince Moore. The Braves traded Vince Moore, Donnie Elliott, and Melvin Nieves. Wink. That's a name that we hear from Tiger fans later. Mm-hmm. For Fred McGriff, and the rest is history. Melvin Nieves, of course, had a cup of coffee here in Detroit. Did horrible. And I've never heard the other two guys in my life. But Fred McGriff, the crime dog, he paid off. I know. And is he still popping in Toronto? Fred McGriff.
If I don't know who he is, I would say no.
Okay. Well, because I never
don't quote me on that.
I don't know.
What about Joe Carter? Could Joe Carter go around anywhere in Toronto and not buy a beer?
Yeah, 100%.
All right.
I would say he's still a fan favorite for sure. Yeah.
I was going to say Roberto Alomar, yeah. Not anymore.
Fred McGriff has one of my favorite memories in baseball. The left-hand batter, whenever he would lace one to the opposite field, up the gap, he would have that beautiful one-handed follow-through that finished around his back. It was just the most gorgeous baseball swing in my lifetime. I loved that whenever the most. And he would just send those rockets just over the fence to, in the left center gap or off the fence. One of my best baseball memories. That guy was good. I hope he gets the Hall of Fame.
There's your answer. He's still a fan favorite.
Yeah. He last played in Toronto in, what, 1990? So
I was
maybe that's
born yet.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. No, I don't know. Maybe Danielle knows Dave Steve. But yeah.
I was just curious about the part that maybe perhaps her father's like, everyone was here, or Jimmy Key spun gold here before we got there.
He for sure does. He's in the other room. I could probably ask him. But
Dad, Fred McGriff.
Get in here.
Yeah, and you could talk to your dad's obsession with, the Sparky Anderson obsession with former Blue Jays, John Cerruti, Lloyd Mosby, David Wells. There was another, I feel like there's another pitcher in there too. I miss it, but I remember the Tigers used to collect ex-Blue Jays like it was like some sort of habit. But so my good, like I said, I had to improvise on the fly here. So I was thinking about this in terms of what would be good about this postseason. And I really wanted to focus on Framil Valdez because going into the postseason, he started to get really comfortable. He had a ERA at 2.98 in September. Yeah, one bad start against the A's, but then at this point, they already clinched at this point. But he went out there and gave him exactly what Houston needed. And Dusty Baker, credit where credit's due to Dusty Baker. And I think Dusty Baker is one of those, a very underrated manager in a sense. This is he's taken, three different teams to the World Series? Or is this second? Wait, I'm trying to think of
Giants. Did he get the Cubs to the World Series? No.
No.
The Nats? No.
Yeah, that was David Martinez in 2019 I was thinking of. But
so he's taken four teams to the LCS, I think, right?
Now.
Yeah.
Reds. He was at the Reds, right? For a while?
Yeah. And it's also good to see, and then the other part of the good, too, is Ron Washington. And just to see Ron Washington putting his ice on his shoulder and some of the theatrics there, that was a nice touch because the bad is how long the postseason's taking. Games. Right now, the average playoff game this postseason has lasted 3 hours and 42 minutes. 3 hours and 42 minutes. That's longer than some football games. I agree with you, Danielle. I can't stay up and go, oh, I got to commit to this. I just DVR everything and I'll just watch it in the morning while I'm working from home. Just screw that. It's just ridiculous.
I used to be the type that I used to stay up so late watching postseason games. I remember there was one couple years ago where the Red Sox were in it and it went on until 4 a.m. And I used to be able to do that, but now I can't do that anymore.
Now 18 innings. Didn't that go 18?
I think so. Yeah. Something like that.
It's rather ridiculous to me that it's just that the way they've been quote unquote trying to shorten the game has failed. Miserably. And it's not a Boston, New York thing too, because it used to be that every time those two teams play on Sunday night baseball, you knew like it was gonna end after midnight because of the way they played. In this case, it's just too much. I mean, I feel like even when they go to the mountain business take way too long. It should be you have 10 seconds or something or whatever the case may be. I know they probably do some I would hope they do some sort of math and average out why it is what it is, but yeah. Anyway, we're gonna see. Oh, they're going to say something. Sorry.
Oh, I could offer a quick live update on the Arizona Ball League. if you want.
Go ahead.
Over Wilmer Flores with a start tonight. First inning, four hits, four runs, a walk, two wild pitches. But he did hit 96.5. And second inning, he came back, 10 pitches, two strikeouts.
You crazy son of a bitch, you did.
He did it. We knew this was going to be a huge challenge for him, so it's nice to see him shake off that rough first inning and come back and ultimately show some progress there. A couple swings and misses with his curveball and a couple with his cutter. Not bad.
Good stuff.
And no, that's all I'm saying.
So the ugly is this entire, and it was an article in the Ringer that came out today that talked about the experimental rules. Did it work in the Atlantic League? And in terms of it, one idea that I still think is the stupidest one is pushing back the mound. Dumb. Extremely dumb. I don't get it. But some of the, in terms of the way they've communicated it, so for example, the mound was moved back by a foot, the 61 feet, 6 inches. And they even tried the double hook rule. The effects were which tried to promote the double hook rule. And in double A, the other thing that I forgot they did too, and I remember this, was the infield shift was banned in double A. And then in triple A, the bases were enlarged from 15 to 18 inches to a slide. And high A, the pitchers had to step off the rubber and attempt to pick off. And low A, pitchers limited to 2 step offs or pick off attempts per plate appearance. I think some of these rules are just, I know they're just trying to put spaghetti on the wall and see what sticks. But the reason why this is ugly to me is because there's no continuity to it. There's no type of kind of concrete evidence this is working, because it just seems like the robo umpires, wow, the robo umpires is still not exact science. And it's still, I know that it's one of those leagues that things that's going to take forever to catch on. I'd rather see a RoboCop. Wow. I was watching the movies that made us earlier, and I watched the one
Prime Directive.
Yeah, Prime Directive. Do not. It hurt the players. Just read out like that. But no, I think I'd rather see a robot umpire than Joe West or Angel Hernandez. Absolutely. And no offense to you, Youper. I know you're an ump.
I know,
but you're not on the MLB level. You do God's work by for example, Michigan is struggling to get officiating the field right now. And so that's why I say you're doing God's work there. That's the reason why I went my ugly is because I feel like this is all going to crap. They haven't really figured it out yet.
I just think some of those rules, there's nothing wrong in my mind with using the minor leagues to try these things out. But is my question is 1 year enough to determine if it's any good or not? I'm not sure about that. I think the bigger bases, I don't think that hurts anything. I think also they were going to make them lower profile and tackier so they don't slip off them. I like that. So we'll just have to see where it goes. What did they say in the article, Raj, about moving the mound back? Did the pitchers care?
According, let me see what they said. Let me circle back on that. But
I remember hearing that the pitchers were very upset about that possibility and considered basically striking or the equivalent of a strike. I don't know what happened once they actually started pitching from farther back. I didn't actually read that article, so Roger would have a better understanding of that. The double hook one, double hook is when you basically, if you take your pitcher out, you also lose the DH, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, which I don't know, that I feel that's not going to be a deterrent for most managers if their pitcher is getting shelled.
I'm glad the Ringer has this data. The one thing, so the offense before and after the strike zone change, so the K percentage was 26%. Walk rate was, walk percentage 10.4. Batting average 238. On base percentage 328. And slugging was 392. Afterwards, it was 26.7 K rate. Walk rate was 9.4. Batting average went up to 250. On base percentage 331. But the slugging percentage went up to 415.
And that was with the mound?
That was with the strike zone change.
Oh, okay.
So I was still looking for the robo ump information. Not the robot information, but the mound. But this was the reason why they did this was to reduce strikeouts. And it was, you mentioned earlier how negative the reaction was, but the it didn't seem the one of the things, the pluses about here. Okay. So I do have the stats for that. It didn't spark any injuries, which is why the pitchers didn't mind it after a while.
Mm-hmm.
So the offense before and after the mound move, before, same categories. K, 17.7, walks, 10.1, batting average, 287, on base percentage, 367, slugging, 441. Afterwards, 18.5 K rate, 10.8 walk rate, a batting average, 279, and on base percentage of 366, slugging a 444. So there's not even much of a difference at all.
Yeah. Interesting.
But yeah, that is the good and bad and ugly for this week. So we do have a listener question, and it's, again, one of my favorite. I love this. I love his. That's a sweet logo. Look at that. Watch this on YouTube. The guy, that Deadly Ninja Bees, salutes you, my friend. So the question is, hey, guys, what do you think that who gets the Fetter Magic next? I thought, well, Alex Lange Lang and Funk look totally different players by year of end. I'll start with you, Danielle.
Good question. First, provided that he's still around for when Jackson Joe needs some help, or doesn't need help, but needs some more developing, I would like to see how that would turn out, I think. Yeah, Jackson Joe.
Alex Fido jumps to mind. Can his career be put on track? He's obviously injured. Before that, he was a little up and down. I don't know when our excitement level up with Alex Fido was before the Tommy John surgery. But certainly the guy has an arm talent. He's showing that. I'm interested to see him working with Chris Vetter. Probably same with Joey Wentz. Put him in that mix as well.
I will tell you who I hope it is. I hope it's Matt Manning. I hope that he had some time with Matt Manning. We saw some changes on the fly, but I hope with an off season and a spring training that they can really work it out there. There are a couple other interesting names I could see it happening with, guys that we saw briefly this year or got him on. I think Jason Foley could be an interesting one as one of their younger, and I don't know, wait, say 25, 26 now, but the guy who doesn't have a ton of experience at higher levels, he's got a big arm, the sort of guy that they can refine a little bit, turn him into a decent bullpen piece. And Roddy Garcia, remember him?
Ah.
The Rule 5 pick from last year. It's another guy who had an interesting arm, threw enough strikes, just got shelled when he pitched in 2020. Tons of home runs. There might be something there for him to work with. And maybe piggybacking on what Danielle said, instead of Jackson Joe, maybe Ty Madden, because he was a guy who was mostly fastball slider in college. And remember, he fell in the draft because people thought his fastball wasn't going to play. So someone like that, maybe. It seems to me that's kind of Federer's specialty, is getting guys to find a pitch that works for them or changing their pitch mix to be a little bit more effective. So he's a guy who I could see getting some results there fairly soon.
That's a good one.
Yeah, that is a good one. I would have to say for mine, if they bring him back, is Willie Peralta. The only reason why I mentioned that is that prior to this season, he threw a split finger maybe 20-30 times, I think, or even less than that in 2015, 2016. This year, his split finger opponents were batting 098 against it. And Jake did a really good job of, in our Tiger review series, about the season he had, a very underrated season. Well, that split finger worked for him. And that's the Chris Vetter effect right there. He looked at it and said, this is your best pitch. Use it and utilize it to the max. And because prior to that, his four seam and sinker that was all he was using. And it was one of those things where I don't really think that at the end of the day, this was something that, yeah, it's awesome programming. So anyway, but the end of the day, it's just, to me, I think that's where we're going to be going with it. But I think if they do resign him, then that's where they're going to go.
We came up with a good list of guys because Chris has demanded that Casey Mize be traded. So we're going to need some of those people to come through next year.
Yes, that was, if I wanted people to get anything from that article, it was that I desperately want to trade Casey Mize. Just a quick aside, I noticed that Chris Taylor hit his second home run of the game. He's now 3-for-3 with 5 RBIs tonight. Impending free agent Chris Taylor. So
what's the score?
It is now 6-2 Los Angeles. 10-3. But no, that was another. I don't know if you saw that one, Leo. Michael Kaiser 343, actually, he asked a question about the Mize article, and I don't know if you guys touched on it or whatever, but he said basically, it seemed in the Mize article, it seems you create more holes that are filled other than the Tampa trade, why not wait one season and look to trade Mize when you get Turnbull back and see what you have in Wentz, Fiedo, Brisky, Olsen, and Manning? Seems you could get more if Eisen improves.
I thought that was a great question.
Yeah.
And the way he framed it was excellent. Of course, I mean, it's Twitter, so you can't put your whole entire thought on there.
Usually. Yeah.
But the one thing he leaves off is, what if Mize gets hurt or pitches poorly this year, too?
Yeah.
That's also on the spectrum of possibilities, unfortunately. But yeah, otherwise, I agree with him. I think that maybe this wouldn't be the year, even maybe next year would be if he has that big year. And they do know more about a few of the other guys. It made a lot of sense. It was a good point.
Yeah, I thought it was a very legitimate point. We were just joking about, but I want to stress that, like, I wasn't advocating for the Casey Mize trade. I know when you write an article like that, it's basically what comes from process, and I understand that. But it was basically just taking Lynn Henning's tweet from a couple weeks ago and seeing if I could come up with something that I thought was realistic for a situation. Like, I guess the one thing, I don't mind people getting upset about it. I totally understand it. And I got some nice comments. Some other people are like, yeah, I read it and I don't want to do that. The only thing I don't want is like people to think that I just threw some ideas against the wall. Like, I've been talking about this article with Raj for a week now.
Yeah.
It took me forever to find trades. Like I went through 30 different trades in my head, like three team trades, all that stuff, working them out. So I found some that I thought were vaguely plausible.
I looked at Tampa one.
Oh, thank you. I don't know if Tampa would like it, but in every one of those deals, there are guys who are like legitimate top 50, top 20 prospects, either now or recently. When you're moving there, I thought the talent was relatively equivalent. But I think to Michael's, in a lot of those deals, you're basically hoping to break even. You're just moving your pieces from one spot to another. It's for pitching to hitting. But I guess what I left unsaid in that article, to me, is I was already a pretty long piece. As I said before, for whatever reason, I can't write anything under 1,800 words, but no matter how much I want to. So I didn't put like the whole idea that, yeah, I think if you go back to the Avila and Hitch press conference from a couple weeks ago, they didn't explicitly say they were going to go out and get a shortstop. I think it was heavily implied, but they did explicitly say they want to get a catcher and they want to get starting pitching. And so in my head, I'm just assuming this offseason is going to involve getting 1, 2, maybe even 3, like legitimate, decent starting pitchers. You could start to maneuver a little bit with what you have already. And the one trade I put up there, which is basically Mize for Nolan Gorman, the second baseman / third baseman for St. Louis. If they make that trade, there's an implied second trade, in my head at least, moving Jamer Candelario, or possibly for a pitcher. It's just, I couldn't put that all in the article, but that's the way I was thinking about it. And this was just the way. And I think you talked about it before, the Tigers were a pretty bad offense this year. As much as we like for improvement, they still finished dead last in WAR, I think, in both Fangraphs or the bottom three, at least. So it was just a way to try to get some more young offensive players to build around.
That's why I enjoyed the article thoroughly. And I could see the merits of all three trades. I just happened to like the Tampa one the best because I just believe in our organization. And even if you took Fort Proctor out and something. Yeah. About six other guys, that would be just fine. They had a wonderful year in their minor league system. But I'll go back to what I said a couple of weeks ago. You're going to make a trade like this to bring in some top line premium talent into the organization. It's going to hurt. It's going to feel bad to make that trade because you've got to give up something. And Henning put that tweet out there. Like, my hope is he didn't just make it up on a bull cloth, that he had some kind of whisper in the wind that he heard. He always will have the scoreboard to point to and say, hey, I had Granderson before anybody getting traded. And the public at large hated that trade beyond belief what had happened.
Yep.
And that was a massive win for the Tigers. Now, that's probably a pie in the sky trade that they're ever going to pull it off again. But I think that's what you shoot for. And if they find the right deal for Casey Mize or Tarik Skubal, well, that's the only one it is.
Yeah, and that's one point you brought up, and it's something that I think all Tigers fans have witnessed over the last 4 or 5 years. We sat and saw Matthew Boyd, Michael Fulmer, and Daniel Norris all show signs of being very valuable and all lose almost all of that value.
Yep.
to their credit, they were still able to spend something out of Norris, and who knows what will happen with Boyd or Fulmer, but it's a balancing act where Casey Mize very well could take a huge step forward and be some pitcher in the future, or he could break like all pitchers do. And it was interesting. One of the guys, I don't know if we had him on the show before, Raj, or if we just befriended him, a guy,
Twitter
at T, it's like up FWFB. I don't know. But he's a Cardinals fan.
Yeah. He's all over prospect side. Good dude.
Yeah. He read the piece and said, I'd do that deal right now, the Gorman one for Skubal rather than Mize. And that's like you said a couple times, you think it might be Skubal who goes. And then I remembered, yeah, you know what? The Cardinals got to see a fully weaponized Skubal this year. I remember that one game, he had 10 strikeouts, gave up two homers, but otherwise was basically untouchable.
Yep.
And as you said, if you want to get some talent, it's going to hurt. You got to, it takes money to make money. So,
but do you have to go for Casey Mize and Skubal? Could you not maybe put forward Matt Manning? Because to me, I would think that Mize and Skubal are untouchable. Mm-hmm. I feel like they've shown a good progression.
Yeah, no, I think you could make the argument for any three of the three young starters, I think, honestly. And if you go by baseball trade value, hey, there's Michael Meyer.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think he's right that it makes more sense if they have more starting pitching. He said it makes more sense if Turnbull and Boyd are healthy, then you have some strength to trade from to acquire a good hitter or two. Yeah, ideally, you'd be dealing from a position of depth. That's basically why I thought someone like Gorman would be available, because the Cardinals have a really good offense with lots of pieces. It's just some ideas that throw out there. But as Danielle was saying, yeah, I think Manning, baseball trade values, thinks Manning is the most valuable of the three young starters, whatever they, who knows if that reflects industry consensus. But yeah, to me, it's just kind of, Skubal, I think, has the most upside. Most people would talk about Manning, but it may be true that he still has a lot of upside. But to me, just based off this year, Skubal showed the most upside. Manning was the rawest. And Mize was this nice, steady, dependable middle. And it, to me, I thought that was like, might be what a team might prefer to target. At least these three teams. There may be other teams that would like somebody like Manning more, who they think they could squeeze out more potential out of. But I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I would say if you want to move Manning, that's totally fine too. Yeah, he definitely, there's a price that could be met to get Matt Manning. Danielle, we did a poll. I think more people would agree with you. Okay, there's no question.
Absolutely.
That maybe Mize and Skubal are untouchable. I've just always been the opinion everybody has a price.
Yep.
There's a price that you put on anybody's head.
Ted DiBiase style.
That's right.
I will say, and I told, and Rogelio is a sweetheart. He actually checked in on me today. He's like, are you all right? Because, and it was funny because I was laughing about it, but I could see how, because that got a lot of negative reaction very quickly. I was not expecting that. I did not expect the level of attachment to Casey Mize to be high already, which is totally cool. Like, I get it. He's homegrown, first overall pick. He came out there and pitched well this year. Yeah, that kind of took me by surprise. So maybe I have to adjust my perception a little bit.
I'll tell you, I was a little bit miffed because one of the comments said that was the dumbest article you've seen all year. And I know damn well I've read a cover article.
I've seen a lot of hot take artists, or I've seen other bloggers just rehash something that was said and then rechange it as there's some sort of their own wisdom, which I'm not going to say what blog it is. I'll tell you guys offline, but it's not Busty Boys. It's not Busty Boys. Those guys are cool, but I've seen that before. And there's a lot of this. I hate when Danielle and I have talked about this numerous times. So many people just read the headline and don't read the article. And there's something, and you know what? I did have a discussion with a couple of people on Twitter about his K rate. And he was talking about, well, Justin Verlander coming in his own. Justin Verlander, by the way, so his K rate in double digits, he had it once in 2009. That was it. Mm-hmm. That he was, and then when he got to Houston, he had three straight before he got injured of K per nines and double digits. So he wasn't always the strikeout pitcher that everybody claims he was, like in the eights or nines, which is good. Don't get me wrong. And that was serviceable. And Casey Mize was double digits in college and through the minors. So it might happen. It may not happen, but that's okay. If he can get outs and be effective, but you definitely need some swing and miss stuff. But just a heads up, Verlander only, as much as people forget, Verlander only had one good in terms of, that's not what I meant. I meant in terms of K rate of over 9, it was 10.1. That was it.
Yeah. And something we talked about before, I don't know if we talked to, I think it was just during one of our phone calls, but we talked about the Fangraphs plus stats where you can compare against league average and where Verlander was still, even as a rookie, was still in like the 10% below league average, whereas Mize is like 15, 17% below, which is not, it's not a huge deal, but it's something worth noting. Strikeouts have skyrocketed. So being under a per inning now means more than it did in 2006. It's, I think even Michael Fulmer, who wasn't a huge strikeout guy, had a higher strikeout rate relative to league average. But again, yeah, it like, it takes everybody time. And then the other thing we talked about with Verlander, I think we talked about off the air, was another kind of potential risk factor there is we forget that everything jumped up for him when he went to the Astros, and the Astros were pretty heavily implicated in all the spider tech, Garrett Cole getting all the high spin stuff. And we know Verlander used to talk to that guy from the Angels getting the sticky stuff. So who knows if he comes back with the same level of spin on his pitches too, which was always a big deal for him. So I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah, fair point.
I don't want to happen is that Verlander comes back, he's not the same thing, and then just fans complain that we spend too much money. And look, honestly, teams need pitching across the board, but Alavila won't. Here's the thing. If you read Alavila, if you pay attention to what he has said throughout, he said this during the the end of season press conference, they're not going to trade prospects. They're not going to trade their guys because they don't want to get burned again, and they don't want to, they're going to be conservative about it. And also, you have to write 20 articles a month, Chris. And I get it. I get it. You know what I mean? We have to, working for Motor City Bengals has been awesome. I love it. I'm almost at 450 articles since I started.
Wow.
Two years ago. Yeah. And so I write a lot. Criticism is fair. I think there's some people that DM me about, what's Chris thinking? Did you read the article? Yes. I don't agree with it. Okay. Agree to disagree. And there are a lot of cool people out there, but the other people are like, I'm following you. And Danielle and I were joking, like making these public declarations. She's like, wait a minute, I think I've done that before. I'm like,
I think I've mostly done it as like a joke.
Yeah.
But I think the funny part to me was in Chris's article, he says something along the lines of this is inadvisable or trade inadvisable. And for anyone who just commented right off the headline saying, I'm unfollowing, this trade is nuts. Why would you do that? What are you saying? Are you okay? Read the article.
Are you on crack?
Yeah. The Mickey Redmond middle finger in the middle. No, I thought it was hilarious. And like I said, I don't think there was a time in my life when I was like 19 and 20. And if I wrote something and somebody criticized it, I would like basically go home and cry. It meant so much to me. I'm a big boy now. If people read it, if disliked it, that's 100% fine. They didn't read it, whatever. If you just read the headline and got upset, I get it. People do that all the time. Nobody has time to read 1800 words about fake trades. But yeah, whatever. And to your point, like this wasn't one to me. I view like player season recaps, like the rookie in review. Those are the ones where I just like, I got to make the, time to make the donut. I got to get some posts out. These are ones that are fun for me, despite all the anger and the people complaining. Yeah, there you go. Get the pitchforks and go after me. I dig it just to get the interaction. I don't do this looking for clicks or angering people. I'd love to write articles, written articles before that were very, positive about stuff that it got good reaction to. I like those too. I don't know. But there's an element of, hey, we've got to write. So.
Yeah. Case in point, for example, I don't know if it was you that I realized I said effect. Was that you that changed the headline there?
I did. Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to make sure because I looked at it. No, it's fine. I just hate that word because I looked it up. I'm like, all right, I think I'm using the right context. And I'm like, wait a minute. Damn it. But yeah, that article hasn't done, I'm looking at the numbers and I'm not going to go into exactly because if you want to know, I'll tell you, but I'm not going to tell everybody. But there's some of these numbers where I'm looking at it and it's not you. Like, I'll pour a bunch of research in an article. I did one on Chico Fernandez last year, one of the first Hispanic players, Latin players to play for the Tigers. I did a lot of research for it and got nothing. No one took a look at it until later. And then it became something a little later. But even then, out of all the articles I've ever done, that was one of my favorite articles to do. And guess what? No one read it.
Yep.
You know,
that's what I think. We've probably all written an article about Justin Verlander that somehow got like 30,000, 40,000 pages. That people, there's certain things that people just want to click on, and other things that I don't think the Seam Shifted Wake article I wrote a couple, I got almost a year ago, I guess, was one of the favorite things. One of the favorite things I've done. And I don't think that got much traction because it's just obscure. And I thought, your piece on Correa, I thought that was really interesting. It was, has anybody else talked about that interview he did where he talked about wanting to be on the East Coast?
Not around here. Like, no, not around here at least. And well, to me, there's where my translation skills come in handy, because not only did he say stripes, he also talked about the pockets. And, you know, it's one of those things where I really believe that you have to watch out for Dave Dombrowski, because then Dombrowski watches what he says in the public. He's very good at hiding his cards. And you don't think Philadelphia, and I looked this up earlier, got a war of 2.2 from shortstop. Dombrowski, if he's getting an open paycheck or open checkbook, and they got a lot of money coming off the books, you don't think he's going to be writing checks left and right. And I think, to answer your question, Michael, I think on YouTube, I think maybe Del Pozo for sure is going to be gone.
Yeah, Michael's question was, he read your 40-man roster piece, and how many do you think get kept? Four, is that what he said? Yes.
Yeah.
We talked before about Cody Clemens, right? We think he's getting added. Or is he just talking about pitchers?
I think Brisky, Hill, I think this was going to get added. Will Brisky, Garrett Hill, possibly, and here's, okay, so possibly in terms of even outfield talent, Reese Olson, for sure, because that's all another one. And then my wild card would have to be, honestly, I would probably even Travis Fernander. I say that only because I think Cody Clemens, I think he, I don't know if he'd get drafted or not. If he did, I don't know. The Tigers, the offensive talent's still not there yet, but the Tigers have some intriguing bullpen prospects if you think about, and starters too. Garrett Hill and Bo Brisky did themselves a favor by pretty much forcing Tigers' hands. Oh, all players. Okay, got it. All right, there you go. Gotcha.
I don't think they have to add Brisky. I think it was the 2019 draft pick, wasn't he?
So yeah, but he came up on the Rule 5 thing for whatever reason.
Interesting. But yeah, Olson for sure. We talk about, right? And I don't know. I just think that it's one of those things where sometimes I feel like they keep guys just because they used a fairly high draft pick on them. And Cody Clemens is a name, and they've got room on the 40 man. For someone like Cody Clemens, I think. But I don't know. We'll see. Is De La Rosa up? He was a 2018 draft pick, right? He'll need to be added if they want him. He got a hit tonight, by the way, in the AFL.
Nice.
Yeah, it's an interesting. That's always interesting to try to figure out. It's not as in the past when they were picking in the top five or whatever. You could also look and say, who are they going to take in the Rule 5? I don't even know if they're going to bother this year. What are they picking? 11th, 12th, I think?
Yeah, considering a trade, if they had somebody they wanted.
Yeah, that's interesting. But
I don't know. Personally, I think the way the team is right now, I'm a little bit there. I would choose a guy every year because it's $50,000 if you send him back. Who cares? It's a rounding error. But I would always find somebody I find at least 1% intriguing and bring him over.
Yeah, who was, I'm trying to forget there, maybe I should forget, the name of the dude they took from the Rangers, the pitcher.
Oh, Reed Garrett.
Good luck. You guys, look at that. Yeah, he was interesting, threw hard and had high spin, good throw strikes, couldn't miss bats. But like you said, that's worth a shot if you've got a better in your...
Sure.
Do they keep
relievers? Yeah.
Yeah, that's relievers are generally, I don't know exactly what he means by that question. I don't know if that's like, do we think the Tigers will keep some relievers or...
And the 40 man?
Will they take a reliever and keep him? I don't know, but... Was it DeJesus?
Yeah.
Would to be added?
I think he does too, yeah.
He does, yeah. You saw that?
He's an interesting one because we're pretty sure he's a Littlefield guy. And Littlefield, if you missed it, ain't running things anymore. So, I don't know. That's an interesting one.
So, you're saying the purge will continue?
We'll see. We'll see what the new coaching staff thinks of. I don't know if they're down there. If the instructs are still going on or if they've started yet. I haven't paid a whole lot of attention to it. Yeah, Jesus was actually.
If they go with relievers and they go with hard throwers, so much of the game now on the major league level is just moving toward, you got to have power and you got to have strikeout relievers in your bullpen. And, you know, I don't know where the Tigers finished in K rate, bullpen K rate this year, but I think you just need to have more and more bodies you can throw at that bullpen who can miss bats. So yeah, if they have some guys they think have that ability in time, I could see him leaning that way on those choices.
And especially Fernander, who's, what, hit 96, 97, Chris, in the Arizona Fall League?
Fernander hit 96. Flores hit 97.4 tonight. Yeah, no, Fernander's an interesting one. Once upon a time, the Tigers added Montreal Robertson to their 40-man roster. I don't know if people remember that.
Montreal Robertson.
He was a big reliever who threw hard, was really raw. And then he suffered a shoulder injury while lifting weights, I think. And that was it. Like, he's gone. It was a real bummer with a story like that. It's almost a situation, but not quite even there. He was this close, Dan, but... Yeah, I could see it. Fernander, they sent him to the AFL. He's got a decent arm, got some swings and misses. I think his inning the other night, 9 pitches, 4 swings and misses. I mean, there might be something there. We saw him. Maybe he's improving that slider.
Yeah, I saw him at West Michigan and in, I think we saw him both.
Yeah,
West Michigan and Erie. And Fernander, really, I thought that he stood out to me because he's a 32nd round draft pick, and just all the picks that were, all the guys who did well this year were all lower minor, like during the like late round draft picks and what have you. You can't really go wrong with that. And so that's either the Federer factor, whatever the case, whatever it is. I think offensively speaking, the Tigers still have some ways to go outside of Riley Green, Chris Turkelson, and Ryan Kreidler. Because if you look at the progress that's made among Erie and some of the draft guys in 2020, except for, and a guy that came right off the bat out of nowhere was Austin Murr. And then,
not out of nowhere to you.
Yeah, Uber knew the whole time. Vast, Michael, in terms of Will Vast, we saw him pitch. He didn't really, it seemed like he was either dead arm or whatever, but he didn't have any snap on his curveball. I thought it was his fastball, just straight. What do you think, Chris? You were with
me. All right, you nailed it. I've seen Will Vast multiple times on TV and in person. We saw him, I remember seeing him a couple spring trainings, and he'd be like up to 96 with a really good curveball. And then he had a changeup that came out of nowhere with the Mariners this year. But then he just, we saw him a couple times at Toledo and he just had nothing. He was like 93 tops. So I think dead arm might be right. He might just be a guy who's good for 15 innings a year, something like that. It's a vaguely interesting name. I don't know if he's, what year he was drafted. He might be a minor league free agent now. I don't know. But
all right. So on that note, thank you so much for watching on YouTube. And of course, thank you for listening to Tiger Minor League or Tiger Radio Pod here at MotorCityBengals.com. Our thanks to Danielle, who again came out the first time. I thought you did a really good job, and you were nervous, but you didn't have to be. I thought you did a really good job. So I just wanted to
still nervous. Still sweating.
Yeah, you did great. And don't forget to check out all our great articles over at MercyBengals.com, including our piece on free agent catchers, and do the research on that. I remember you discussing that there is not much of a market out there.
Mm.
Me? Oh, no. I think I referred to it as slim pickings. So I still stand by that.
Yeah. It's going to be in terms of the Tigers got to dress up, they have to get creative and hopefully make a trade. Back next week. It'll be close to Halloween, so maybe a Halloween scene type episode. I did the logo for Tiger Money Report in Halloween. I love Halloween. It's one of my favorite times of the year where I could get I think we're passing out candy this year. I'm not really sure what we're doing yet, but it's on a Sunday. So that's gonna be strange because we haven't passed out candy the last couple of years. This year I'm gonna get dressed up and pass out candy. So, but I might be wearing this hoodie, who knows? But we'll see you next week. Have a great week, everybody.
Go you tactics.
Yeah.